10 and go to item 11, which is at the top of my list to discuss with our new CEO to figure out if we can come up with a different title than miscellaneous, but we'll work on that. Anyway, miscellaneous staff reports. Do we have any staff report items? Yes, potpourri. Yes. People and places. Yeah.
I do have one report under the procurement policy. We did have an engagement over $10,000 that I need to report out to the board. It was a contract for Axia for operational due diligence on a finalist firm related to an investment in a trend following strategy. So if there's any questions on that, Tim or I could answer, but then Tim also has an update.
Tim, go ahead.
There we go. All right. Just a reminder to the trustees that we're, as Scott mentioned earlier, the asset liability study is coming up. In conjunction with the asset liability study, Verisk does interviews with each trustee on risk tolerance. And so we just need to get confirmation from each trustee that you're willing to share your contact information with Verisk so that they can set up interviews with you. So I know we've gotten some of those confirmations back. But for anybody else who wants to have direct communication with Verisk, we just need to get that confirmation that we can share your contact info. So, and that'll be coming up. I believe Verisk is trying to set those up the last week of March. So coming up fairly quickly here.
Excellent. Thank you. Jerry?
If we've done that prior, we don't have to review that.
Or do we have to update it, or unless the contact information hasn't changed? Do we have to re-up?
Past practice has been to re-up, yes.
Okay.
Under the new CEO, that might get reviewed.
You know, Jerry, your risk profile might have changed.
That's true. Right?
You know, who knows? Any other comments or questions on this item? Thank you, Tim, for the heads up on that.
Real quick, context of risk in our current economic situation and fixed income returns and so forth, when we were getting pretty much nothing in, or very little in fixed income, we were forced to take more risk to meet our assumed rate. So has that changed overall with respect to our investments and our need to assume more risk? Or I think understanding risk in the context where we're at, especially with respect to fixed income, is probably helpful.
Yeah, and that's a great point there. And I think point of clarification, the interviews are more around, less around investment risk, which would be measured by volatility and that sort of thing. That'll come out during the asset side of this. This is more from each trustee's perspective, how do you define risk in terms of headline risk, pure risk, downside risk, you know, funded status volatility, and just get some feedback on the other portions of this. How comfortable are you with risk rather than saying, here's various asset allocations and which level of risk you want to get. That's going to come out later in the process. This is gauging comfort level of the trustees.
So for an example of that would be, how would you feel about venture capital? And so there could be headline risk, right? I mean, but the real risk to consider is what's your return versus loss.
Yeah.
And so that kind of discussion, right? I mean, how do you...
So you're stretching my memory banks as to the range of questions that Verisk asked, but I remember in the past it's been, if the portfolio were to drop 25% in 1 year but make 12% over 10 years, are you comfortable with that or do you want a smoother profile? So it's more around the... defining the parameters of liquidity, you know, short-term volatility versus long-term gains, more around those fields.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, headline risk is one thing, but I mean, the real risk that matters is our returns, I think.
So let me jump in just on top of Tim's response. I remember the last time Verisk did this, I was a relatively new board member. Maybe I'd been here a couple of years at that point. And so what the interview was, and it was a very detailed interview, and they were done in person at the time. We might do them via Teams or otherwise now, but at the time they were done in person. The interview is designed to educate Verus on literally each board member's appetite for risk. In every sense of that word, so trying to delve into your understanding of portfolio risk management without delving into your personal investments, trying to get a gauge or a feel for how you look at it, because they're trying to measure individually and ultimately collectively, literally the appetite for how aggressive do you want your portfolio to be or not within the context of our policies. So a lot of that Q&A is designed to figure out where you land on that. It's less about things like headline risk or what do we think about external items. It's more about delving into what you know about investment theory and how willing are you to walk that walk. I'll just concede. I can tell you that at that interview, I remember being asked what I thought about the current Sharpe ratio, which prompted my question, which was, what's a Sharpe ratio, right? Because I didn't know what that was at the time, right? It's not a term that I used in my daily life.
Yeah, sorry.
So, anyway, that just stands out to me as something that I remember going, I had one of those little aha moments, had to be told what that was. And then appreciating what it was, that became the context for the next series of questions. So that's what that interview's about. I'm sorry, Tim, but I just wanted to share that.
That's very helpful, because since I haven't sat through these interviews, they're for trustees alone. I see the output. But I know there's, one of the goals is trying to see where there's consensus on the board versus dispersion, and you can build on consensus. Dispersion needs to be addressed. And they come back and say, kind of give you a chart of, here's your ability to assume risk from a financial standpoint, here's your willingness. And the interesting thing here, this will be the third time we've done this with the board. Trustees change over time, so we can start to see how that's moved over time here. Because we did one in 2016 with the initial asset allocation study, updated in 2020 in the early days of COVID via, I think, a survey at that point in time. I do believe that Verus is going to try and do it in person this time around.
Okay. It's probably more helpful for them, because, you can get body language on a Teams call or a Zoom call, but it's not quite the same. Any other questions for Tim on this item? What? Not hearing any? Any other staff reports, do we think, or no? No more staff reports? All right. So with that, let's go to trustee comments. Any trustee comments? Yes, David.
Yeah, I just got back last night from the Common Fund Conference. Very good conference. I would recommend others to attend next year. There was quite a bit of focus on AI and robotics. That's coming down the pike. Robotics is expected to be an industry worth in the trillions coming up in the next 15 years. And they're looking for advances in factory robotics and humanistic robotics. So your personal assistant and all that stuff. More of that to come. They also expect that AI will be better and better at self-improvement, that it will train itself, learn and train itself going forward. And it's considered that the platform shift with AI will be even greater than the platform shifts of personal computers and the smartphone. The big challenge for the public will be to have trust in this whole thing, and that will impact adoption of AI. In real estate, the sectors that are apparently doing well are data centers, self-storage, and cold storage. Data centers in particular, and especially with the development of AI, and then cold storage for increase produce consumption, and also cold storage for pharmaceuticals, like when we had the COVID vaccine and so forth. With respect to environmental and sustainable concerns, resource security, capital security, and market volatility and dislocation were high on the list. Water is a major issue, supply chains, shoring up manufacturing, and geopolitical conflicts are considered quite the problem. Renewables are seen as still with room for significant growth with respect to wind and solar. Agriculture is as was presented as an underappreciated and underpenetrated asset class. And going forward, to improve agriculture, precision agriculture is gaining steam, where you have drones and so forth going over the fields and hitting one weed with the weed killer instead of the whole field and so forth. But that is gaining traction. And then water resource development is especially critical in the context of climate change. We had the benefit of hearing from James Bullard, who was a former Fed president from St. Louis. And he felt that a soft landing was very, very likely with a 2+2 situation, with 2% GDP and 2% inflation. He was impressed that currently we have a situation of decreasing inflation, but still with robust labor and economic growth that has been exceeding expectations. So he was actually very much in the positive camp regarding the economy and rates and so forth. And he feels that the Fed will start to reduce rates before we hit their 2% target, so as to help smoothen or soften the landing, so to speak. Then we had a tremendous speaker by the name of Ian Bremmer, who is a political scientist and also a consultant for folks in Congress and corporations and so forth. He talked about global risk and the positives that he saw. He started with the positives, was U.S.-China relationship is more stable now than it has been in the last 10 years and is moving in the right direction. And he feels a big part of that is because of China's problems with their economy. He said that China's economy is worse in and of itself, and also that there is a lack of direct foreign investment. And we've had those discussions here on the board. It's like, what can we do with emerging market investments ex-China because of the concerns we've had with China? Well, that apparently has been felt. And also, the geopolitics in Asia are now worse for China. And part of that may be from the South China Seas and so forth, and perspectives of aggression by China. And the U.S. is actually doing much better now and is seen more as a partner and ally than China is. So China finds itself in a position of having to work to improve the relationship. And so quite a bit has been happening under the radar with respect to discussions and diplomatic relations and so forth, and so that's a stabilizer. The other positive or stabilizing influence is from India, where soon to be the third largest economy. India is in a position of relative power. And Modi is predicted to win the next election, and apparently he now has or enjoys an 80% approval rating. amongst the citizens. India wants to be a bridge to the West, and India is a member of BRICS, which in the past was more of an economic bloc, and now has become more of a political bloc with anti-West sentiments. However, India is the biggest player in that group, and India wants to minimize the politics and maximize economic relationships, collaboration, and growth. So India is looking to be is looked upon as a stabilizer in that situation. So the negatives, he had three main negatives or concerns that he had going forward. One is the Russia-Ukraine situation. Two is the Israel-Gaza situation. And the third is America versus America, which is one of his biggest concerns. With respect to Russia-Ukraine, he stated Ukraine is running out of ammunition and it's running out of people. And he foresees that Ukraine will likely get partitioned. And Ukrainian ability to recover the lost land is unlikely. Europe is very worried about this. And if you remember from the Cold War days, the concerns about the domino effect of communism spreading and all that stuff. Well, there's a similar domino concern with respect to Russian aggression and coming up against Europe. So there's concern that if Ukraine falls, even in part, which to some extent it has, that next could be Estonia. And other countries. So Europe is somewhat panicked about this. And so they have invested quite a bit into the Ukrainian conflict. And now we're waiting for the U.S. to also approve aid further. With respect to Israel-Gaza, Bremer's thought was that Israel wants to finish off Hamas entirely. And the question is at what cost? There's already been considerable cost. And that even though there are talks for a ceasefire, which could last for several weeks, Bremer's concern is that once that ceasefire is over, things will just go right back to where they were. So he's not very hopeful regarding the Middle East. And unfortunately, another concern of his is that this has kind of fueled the flames of more anti-West radicalism that is looking to be generational threat, and that something we'll be looking to deal with for decades to come. And then with the American-American or American versus American concern, he stated that the largest economy in the world is also the most politically dysfunctional. And he's very, very worried about that. With respect to the election coming up, if the current president stays in power, we'll have more of the same policies. And if the contender is elected, then we'll see what happens. The relationship with Europe will likely worsen, and it's not clear what will happen with China, and the Middle East is also a big wild card. So that's part of what I gleaned from this conference, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you for that uplifting report.
Hopefully I get the John Phillips approval.
Yeah, no, you're you've been mentored well. This is good. Any other trustee comments today?
Louis. CalPERS General Assembly, I'll do a little quick of it, because they have covered with. Seemed like we were at the same conference for AI stuff, and they added on our conference basically the AI market to reach nearly $2 trillion by 2030. China and U.S. attracted the largest AI investments from venture capitalists so far. Then they talked about the geopolitical stuff. Our guy said Ukraine will remain but smaller. And that after the war, Russia will be will find themselves dependent on China. Climate change is, I guess, the Pentagon and NATO are buying, they're concerned, reducing the carbon footprint and switching to EV vehicles and solar on the bases. And they were talking about China and Russia working together to weaken the U.S. Relations within with U.S. allies. And the current election they're concerned about is false info coming out of that for the elections. So I'll stop at that.
And then I was at the same conference, and really summarized greatly the AI fascinating stuff. Now, I found very intriguing Francis Donald, economist's assessment that we're really in very much of a recession environment right now, and she thinks we could easily be in one in the next few months. And so we need to continue to be cautious while people have savings, which is different from most recessions. There's still all the other indicators are there, and the economy really has not had time to respond to the Fed's increases, which, you know, usually takes 2 years. So anyway, another pessimistic, happy thought, but otherwise a really interesting conference.
Yeah, that echoes what Jamie Dimon said, I think, just a few days ago. Not out of the woods yet or something to that effect. So I guess we'll see. And Jay.
Yeah, same conference, and Trustees provided a good summary of the content there. We also noted that Paul Angelo is retiring.
Yeah.
And so I think for our plan with Paul retiring and Harvey retiring, and then also our own internal turnover, I just wanted to note that there's a lot of institutional knowledge in flux here. So I just thought it might be a kind of organizational concern to watch out for.
That's an excellent point. Gary.
Editorial comments, if nothing else. I saw one of the most discouraging things I'd seen yesterday about AI. It's obviously talk of the town. Talk about garbage in, garbage out. It was an introduction in Japan, I believe, of a new automated individual standing fully dressed in a suit and whatnot. And during the presentation, this, whatever it is, reached down with its right hand and was attempting to pat the woman next to him at the podium on the posterior. And I thought, that is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. So now even the AI people have to go through harassment training because clearly they're not getting the word.
Well, given that it's learned behavior.
Yes, right. No.
Somebody, one of the engineers was playing a very horrible practical joke.
That was one of the strange things. And the other thing
From the Middle East, I think.
Was what?
It was in the Middle East.
Oh, it was in the Middle East?
Saudi Arabia, yeah.
Well,
yeah, you're right. It was. It was not Japan. It was Middle East. And it was like, holy cow. But it tells you garbage in, garbage out on computers, and they're picking this up from their programmers. Yeah. The other thing that was discouraging was to see joint naval exercises between Russia, China, and Iran.
Oh, yeah.
And if you hearken back on the last time we used the expression axis of evil, it represented different countries during the 40s, but we're back with another set of countries, and they're applying the axis of evil expression again, and it's a little bizarre. I have to say, Iran had both of their ships out there. That was it. But
the Chinese... How many of our ships did they have?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's a very scary thing to see and hear that application of that expression, the axis of evil. So.
Okay. And on that happy note...
I'm sorry. I was going to say, we're just sliding right off the cliff. That was a bad metaphor, but anyway, you got the idea. Any other trustee comments? All right, hearing none, we stand adjourned. We'll see you at our next meeting. Thank you. And again, just as we close, congratulations to Christina. Looking forward to the future. And when we come back, we'll hit the ground running.